Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening. We have an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
No words. We just need music. Welcome back, everybody. Back to Popcorn Talk. We are here dissecting Rocky, of course, 1976. Amazingly written by Sylvester Stallone. Written and directed. Not actually, he didn't direct this, but he directed all the other ones following. But we're doing Rocky. I'm so excited. Yep. I'm your host, Marissa Serafini. Joining me, I have...
It's Dimitri Panos. Hello, movie fans. And yes, we are doing Rocky. This is part of, we'll call it a throwback.
Right? Definitely a throwback.
This is definitely a throwback, Academy Awards, Oscar, show, to honor, Best Supporting, Actor nominee Sylvester Stallone, where in 2015, going into 2016, he has come full circle by back in 1977, where his little unknown Sylvester Stallone with his with his script in hand made an Academy Award winning movie, which garnered Best Picture Oscar for 1976 Rocky. That was that those ceremonies took place in 77, and now we come to 2016, heading into the Academy Award nominations, and Mr. Sylvester Stallone is yet again nominated.
Yeah.
As for Best Supporting Actor for his character
of Rocky Balboa. We're so excited. If you guys haven't listened to Anatomy of a Movie, I think Dimitri and I, we fairly, both of us, always geek out over Rocky and somehow always throw Rocky as reference into our random discussions.
Well, let's be real. Let's be honest. I geeked out so much on Rocky that I got so much shit from my thing on Creed.
I know.
Because
same here.
I was, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, folks. I'm a Rocky fan. I just couldn't believe. I couldn't believe the anonymous hate.
I know.
And it was Venom. And it wasn't even for a movie that I said that I hated. It wasn't a movie that made me angry. But people were upset that I was comparing it to Rocky. And I'm like, well, what am I supposed to compare this to, folks? Finding Nemo? And I'm really glad that... Well, today we did two special. We did another special thing just prior to this show.
We did a watch-along to Rocky, of course.
And a watch-along.
And added our two cents to that.
Yeah, and just for a watch-along is a running commentary. It was my first time doing one, and I had a great time. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course.
And we did it to Rocky. And for me doing that, it was special. I haven't seen Rocky from beginning to end in a few years.
Really?
And it definitely in a few years. I mean, I've seen the movie so many times.
Same here.
That beat for beat, expression, I know the movie. Growing up with the movie, but it was special doing it in our format because it's a running commentary, and hopefully watch Rocky with our commentary and hopefully you'll appreciate it. It's just like watching a Blu-ray with commentary.
Absolutely.
To what is really, truly an exceptional movie.
And I love, it's so funny you say it's been a while since you watched Rocky in its entirety in a while. For me, it's been probably like 14 hours. Because, no, I kid you not, I watched this movie for the umpteenth time last night. And then at the end of this, I was like, God damn, Rocky is so damn good. I'm going to watch the third one. And I decided to go from one to three, and I skipped two, because I watched two like a month ago. So Rocky is in my normal schedule of movie rotation. I watch it all the freaking time, like all of them except for five. But I watched Rocky a ridiculous amount of times. I love Rocky so much. I'm so excited that we're talking about this because we decided to do Rocky because it is the Academy Awards season and we're talking about this movie. And we every year on Anatomy, we tend to do at least one, maybe two, if we're lucky, one full dissection of an Academy Award winner.
Yeah.
And Rocky won for the 1977, the 49th Academy Award for Best Picture and Best Director.
Yeah, and it makes sense that we do Rocky. I mean, there was a ton of great pictures that we could have chose from, right, to do a throwback. To me, it makes sense that, you know, especially with Sylvester Stallone getting the nod for Best Supporting Actor, it just makes sense that we bring it home to Rocky. Because Rocky really, you know, as a movie, I was a wee lad at 10 years old. And, you know, there were a couple of movies prior to that, going into that, that, you know, it just changed movie-going audiences' expectations and what they wanted for their entertainment and movies. And Rocky was part of a great group of films, and it won the Academy Award, which really signifies that the country wanted to start to feel good about themselves. And the Italian Stallion really helped. I think it is sort of ironic. I have to point out that there were two movies in '76, two great sports movies, one of them being my favorite, that had similar themes. The 1976 also gave us the original Bad News Bears, another great sports movie. And thematically, Rocky and the Bad News Bears are connected because each movie is not about winning. It is not about winning. It's you can make it to the end. You can work. You can get it here. And, you know, the bad guy might win, so to speak. But it's the underdog that we want to see go the distance. So, 76 was a great year for that, and Rocky exemplifies.
Yeah, I was not born before Rocky came out, but I grew up loving Rocky. I did Taekwondo, and like, so I was really in the like the fighting stance and that type of, you know, finding a story and a character to gravitate to and that you root for, while there's a fighting component to it. Like, it really spoke to me. And I really got into it when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I still love it today. We're still talking about it, and we're going to talk about it now. So
it's funny that you brought up that you're into Taekwondo, because John G. Avildsen, best director
for
Rocky, you know, he sort of kind of went back to that similar canvas because he's the same guy that did The Karate Kid. Okay.
Yeah, but was not a fan of boxing, and he still doesn't like boxing, and yet he took on a boxing movie.
Well, I just mentioned your Taekwondo because, you know, as a director, he went from Rocky, and again, who can't love The Karate Kid? Another story about an underdog, you know, the kid from Reseda, you know, and then Pat Morita. But, you know, I mean, you look at the parallels. Pat Morita is Mickey, in a sense, you know, training little Daniel LaRusso. So John G. Avildsen really knows how to pull those heartstrings, but earning the emotion. And that's why Rocky works, is because it earns every emotion that is brought from the audience. So and again, it happened as we were watching it here. So, yeah, it's great stuff.
Let's definitely get into it. Sylvester Stallone, he wrote this film. There was actually several different revisions of this script, but he finally had the final draft and got it started. And it was actually Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and United Artists Robert Chartoff and Erwin Winkler. Erwin Winkler. They like fell in love with the script and wanted to buy the rights to it. But Sylvester Stallone was like, "All right, I'll let you have it if I star in this movie."
Right.
And they were so against that because he, at that point back in the 70s, was not a well-established actor yet. So I think it's great how Sylvester, because he knows the story, he knows the character, he fought so hard to be Rocky in his own film. And it definitely shows throughout the films, like, he is true to the character because Rocky is him and he is Rocky.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, occasionally if you watch us on Anatomy of a Movie, we'll talk about the performances of particular actors, actresses, and we will say often that actor or actress owns that role. Like, you cannot see anybody else playing that role. And, you know, I think Sylvester Stallone, number one, he catapulted his career, but he is Rocky. You know, I could completely understand some studio exec suits thinking, we have to reboot Rocky. How do we do this? And somebody probably wisely said, you can't do it. Nobody's going to be Stallone. So instead, why don't we do Creed? And then that's a great idea. Maybe we can get Stallone in it. Right. We'll have Rocky in it. Stallone owns this part. He credits Rocky Balboa for his success. He thanked Rocky Balboa at the Golden Globe nominations. He's thanked this character. So as much as he's been Rambo, another loved character, another successful franchise. But it is Rocky Balboa that is true to his heart. And I also believe, too, from his sentiments, Sylvester Stallone's sentiments, it's giving him pause, time to reflect. When you're young, you're scrappy, this is what you're going for, you win Best Picture, a lot is being thrown at you. When you have time to look back and reflect on things, you realize, wow, what a special, amazing time that is. And, it's nice to see him reflective. And I think that going into the Academy Awards season, that those could potentially give him points. He's always been around. He's been a stalwart, right? Yeah. And yeah, because of Rocky, like Rocky, he is an actor. He's had his ups and downs. Let's face it, right?
He's had.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we witnessed it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And going into Rocky, he had bit parts. He was in Bananas. He was in a Roger Corman movie called Death Race 2000. Actually a fun movie if you haven't seen it. And you can sort of kind of tell that the guy had some semblance of a charisma. There was something there. But he really nails it in Rocky.
Yeah.
You know.
And so John Avildsen got on board with this. And I think John does, like, such a great job at storytelling. And because, obviously, Sylvester had the concept and the character and the story, but I think John, like, he has such an eye for how to tell it.
He does.
And while we were, doing the watch-along, I was like, I love this shot, I love this. He sets it up in ways that we can understand each character, who they are, what eventually their character arc will be. And, like, who to root for, who not to root for.
Right.
And I think also he actually helped the actors. You know, we had Carl Weathers and Sylvester Stallone, like, actually helped them in their acting performances as well. They're, for the Blu-ray special features, if you have the Blu-ray of Rocky, they put 8mm home footage of Carl and Sylvester sparring against each other during rehearsals, just so... Even during rehearsals, mm-hmm. like, John had an eye for what it would look like.
Right.
And it would show the two guys, like, what they would look like in during the fight sequences and whatnot. And it shows, like, the different types of styles that they have in fighting.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And John G. Avildsen really found his wheelhouse. I mean, prior to Rocky, I mean, guess what we learned in school today, or Joe, or... Turn On to Love. I mean, he had done some movies that, quite frankly, I'm just be honest, that I haven't heard of. And then when he gets Rocky, really his storytelling punch comes through. And it was a style, definitely it was the 70s. Shots lingered on. But, I'm not entirely sure that we could have a Rocky-type movie today. Be as it may that you love Creed. Okay, I get it. I just didn't love it as much as you did. I think it's a good movie. It's tough today to make a sports film. It's tough today because there are only so many outcomes. And if you don't have character, and if you don't allow the audience to be drawn into the character, say like in Rocky... Mm-hmm. It's hard, and that's what Rocky did. But I also feel that the timing and how Rocky and when it was released played a major part in its success and continued love, because it's a theme that carries on and on about the underdog and how about being good, having heart, stamina. You
and
run.
Heart.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So. And I will say, and I think I've said this on other dissections too, every time I run and I hit my last mile, I will literally stop and change my playlist to Rocky. Like, Rocky theme song from the fourth one, the training montage. Just the training montage, because that's like 6 minutes long. Right. Could you not? Right. This is how serious I am. Yeah. Like, I will turn into that and play all Rocky theme songs for my last mile.
Sure. Yeah.
Because Rocky is, like, it's so uplifting, and we'll get to the music. But, like you said, it's uplifting, it has heart. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to tell sports films now, because I feel Rocky, it's all about, people love him because of the character, not because of his athletic ability. He's a great guy who can box, rather than, I feel like, sports now, people watch people like, these are great people because they can box, but then you learn about the person afterwards.
Yeah.
So it's like, you... Today's society loves people's athleticism compared to the actual person.
Yeah.
And it's the reverse with that. And that's what I think everyone gravitates to and remembers at the end, because Rocky was just a lovable character.
Yeah, he has definite a charm, and there's this charisma. It's really not necessarily in the movie. It's not the not giving up part. Comes up in the last three quarters of the movie when he's with Adrian, and he says, you know, for me, it's just, I just want to go the distance. I just, you know, the important thing was, I want to go the distance. And these are words that he says. It's not necessarily about winning. And, you know, that means so much when you get to that point. It's like, I've been given this opportunity. I just want to do right and go the distance. And, I don't want to look like a chump. I'm going to give it my all. So that is a theme that resonates throughout that entire movie, but it can resonate through so many things. And that's what makes it hard. Because in a sports movie, you win, you lose, you draw. Okay? That's the only outcome that can happen, unless an asteroid falls in your stadium and ends everything. But that's the only thing that can really happen. So how do you make it? How do you make it interesting for today's audiences? To be drawn in. Many lessons can be learned from the creation and making and filming of Rocky, that it really does start from the script, right?
Absolutely. And the script had so many revisions to it.
Sure.
Rocky. Sylvester Stallone. They go hand in hand. Sylvester Stallone was once mentioned that he wrote about 300 pages over the production, and they were constantly changing it because they had such a low budget.
Right.
That they, you know, during production, things are constantly changing every single day, so you have to make do with what you have and change things so it works.
Right.
So they would also change the storyline because of just, like, everyday environmental situations that was affecting the filming.
Yeah.
And so the film was so... they originally wanted to sell the film for $350,000 for the rights.
Right.
But, of course, again, like, Sly refused to, unless he was in the movie. And then they made an agreement, and sure enough, he was.
Yeah, and the agreement, by the way, is sort of kind of spectacular, because he actually, Stallone, he had this foresight. So, going back, first off, we should say... That his script was born of a Muhammad Ali
Charles Wepner
fight, and working it, and he was Stallone himself, a movie dreamer, he was working at a box office at a New York movie theater, and you know, he'd written 32 rejected scripts at this point. So, of course, he allegedly wrote Rocky over the course of one long weekend, pouring his own underdog dreams out into the page. And when producers Chardoff and Winkler offered him $265,000 for it, he held out for much less, $75,000 and a percentage of the profits, but with one important stipulation, that he be cast as the lead. To even consider... a percentage of the profits back in 1976, like that, whether he advised himself or if he had somebody advise him, he was putting a lot on the line.
It's very bold.
It is bold, because you are rarely in that time period. Up to that point, you had Jaws. Jaws is the first movie to make $100 million. Okay. It was not an easy feat, and Jaws did it on 500 screens. Now, did you research, because I could not find as to how many locations Rocky opened up on, other than the fact that it did open up in November. But I don't know as to how many locations it opened up at. To make $100 million at that time period, Well, it was
that's a good amount.
It's a one in a million shot.
It really was.
So, and that movie ended up making over $100 million, and he got percentage points off of those profits, which is insane. And it really brought Sylvester Stallone to light. He became a pinup. He became a hero for so many kids, adults alike.
Because
he had a dream and he wrote this script. And it's weird because I don't think times have changed. And, you know, there's so many scripts in Hollywood. Just to get one read,
yeah, it says a lot.
It's crazy.
And even if you read it, they'll toss it. So.
Right, yeah,
and
they'll toss
the whole
it.
Process is just brutal.
Yeah.
That's the industry. I think it's really great that Sylvester, he had the idea. And he was so adamant about, and he was, he really believed in it.
Right.
To the point where a no-name actor was so adamant about being in the film. It really speaks to, who he is and how much this was a passion project for
Absolutely.
Him. So he... For filming Sylvester Stallone, prior to shooting, he actually trained for 6 months with legendary fight trainer Jimmy Gambina, who I personally don't know of his fighting accolades. But Jimmy was actually the corner man for his training scenes. So he even made an appearance in the Rocky film.
Yeah.
Which I think that was a neat little tidbit.
Yeah. And, the other great thing about this, too, we talked about directing. Obviously, we'll talk more Stallone. But when you come to editing this movie and the cinematography as well, this movie really, again, it's one of those movies where it really, really clicks. The editing, the shots, the way that they're composed, what it comes back to, the way a montage is filmed. And again, this was in the mid-70s.
The start of all of Rocky's memorable montages.
Correct. And it's interesting because if you compare this montage to the other Rocky movies, it's not as fast, not as quick cut.
No.
It stays on them running for a while. We're not going to 100 different types of boxing
places.
Training. You know,
technology wasn't involved in this.
Technology wasn't
at
involved.
All.
And, there is a testament to the way that this movie, the way that it was edited really gave it a feel. The way that it was shot, gave it a great feel. Richard Halsey, who is the director or the editor on this movie, who did movies like Edward Scissorhands, he did Sister Act. This is a guy who's done things from comedy to heartfelt drama like Edward Scissorhands and, of course, Rocky. So he knew the beats. And this is, again, one of those things. This movie goes on beats.
Emotional
beats, for sure. Absolutely.
Because I feel like the great thing about Rocky, this is only – it's a solid two-hour film. But it doesn't feel extra long that you're like, oh, I hope it's over. And it is, for the most part, it is a very slow-paced film, if you think about it.
Compared to today's movies.
Movies where editing is just crazy and people's attention spans aren't there. I think the great thing about this film and the pacing and on top of the editing is each scene represents something. Mm-hmm. You can get a memorable moment out of each scene. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great because that really captures the audience for every 10 minutes that there is a scene going on.
Yeah, and it's also great for allowing the audience into the character of Rocky himself, because it lets scenes play out so that we can see his charm, we can see his tenderness, we can see his heart. And, there's a great scene. I remember when we were watching it, when he was walking the girl. I forget her name right now. And I just saw the movie.
Marie.
He's walking Marie, and they have this great dialogue where he's like her bigger brother. She's a neighborhood girl that obviously he's familiar with. And he's telling her, he's giving her a life lesson. Almost like a big brother, almost like a dad.
They remember the rep.
Yeah, they remember the rep, but it's a long walk.
It is,
right?
Because
it's a lot
of
dialogue.
He's walking everywhere in this film because he doesn't have a car and he doesn't know how to drive.
Absolutely. And then when he brings her home, it's all solidified by, screw you, creepo.
Actually a different line back then. They changed it so they could keep the PG rating.
PG,
but use your imagination for what that word really was.
And again... it was one of those scenes that, like, going, hey, this guy is nice. He's looking out for this teenage girl. And the thanks he gets is, screw you, creepo. And you just, like, you just sort of kind of a little crestfallen. You're like, oh, man.
He tried.
Like, he tried. But that's what the theme of Rocky is. He's always trying. And even, you know, he doesn't even make the best leg breaker for the mom.
No,
like, he can't even break a guy's
thumb. He's sympathetic.
Thumbs. Yeah, he's like, yeah, he'll pay you next week. And he gets chastised
as
well.
Broke his thumb.
Yeah, so.
But the great thing also about Maria is that she comes back in Rocky Balboa and they kind of actually redeem her character.
I really was a big fan of Rocky Balboa. I was pleasantly surprised, and it proved that that's Stallone himself. Well, very well versed with his character, but he didn't cheat the character out. And by having Marie come into the movie the way that she did, it's like that was a nice bookend. To me, Rocky Balboa is a perfect bookend to the Rocky movies. You can forget about 5 and just, you know, you can just go Rocky, Rocky 2, 3, 4, Rocky Balboa,
6.
And it's a perfect, you know, it's a nice bookend.
It really is.
And I like the recall of Marie as well. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a small character, I feel like even the small characters we only give for one scene, they're still memorable. Like Marie. Like Gazzo.
Mm-hmm.
Gazzo, he was fun, the mobster.
Yeah.
But because he was even looking out for Rocky, always giving him money, and realizing that Rocky, he is a good guy. He helps other people. He's helping Gazzo, so it's like he's going to help him financially.
He's going to help him financially. You know what I mean? The guy was tied into the mob. My guess is he probably had some dollars laid down in the fight, and that Rocky could have probably,
just a few
you know,
extra.
Maybe. But, you know, the other great thing, too, though, is that Spider Rico also, I believe, shows up in Rocky Balboa. If I'm correct.
Yeah.
And of course, the movie opens up in the very gritty, dirty, seedy,
dingy
of, like, you know, club where we open up in our first fight. And it's great. It's a great opening for this movie because the dichotomy between that fight and where we end up couldn't be. They were two just different universes.
Two completely different ends of the spectrum.
Absolutely.
It's like where Rocky started and where he ended up.
Yeah. He finishes his fight with Spider Rico. He's walking out of the ring.
He's a bum.
Well, he's smoking a cigarette. He gets some booze and some woman's like, you're a bum! like that's the character we open up on. And already from his eyes to his demeanor, you're sort of like, oh yeah.
He's down on his luck.
He's a little bit down on his luck, but it gets you, I want to know a little bit more about this character. And that, I think, is part of the genius of Sylvester Stallone's script.
Also, and we open up with Rocky on a win. It shows that he is a winner. He does try. He does know how to fight, whether it be unconventional or whatnot. He's just not the best fighter, but he has the capacity to win.
Yeah, he has the capacity and the heart to pull through. And if somebody's going to wrong him, he's going to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it was that headbutt that sort of wakes him up.
Yeah. Well, someone who did him no wrong, Adrian. I feel like
of course.
Getting into character, so definitely Adrian.
Absolutely.
Oh my God, I love Talia O'Shire. She's amazing. I love Adrian's character and what she represents and how their relationship, Adrian and Rocky, never falters ever once in any of the movies that Adrian was in.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the 5th one, when they lost all the money, Adrian was still there. And not to keep bringing back to the 5th one. But I love that they're, from the start, just shows, like, where she started off as. Mm-hmm. Like you said during the watch-along, like, they both evolve together.
Yeah.
And they both grow together.
Yep.
And they become stronger, better people when they're with each other.
It's a courtship, and it's what is a tender courtship. Again, this is something else that we were talking about. If you remember the courtship, and you hadn't watched our watch-along, if you remember the courtship, you know, in any other movie, it could have been pretty menacing, could have been threatening, could have been predatory. In the way Rocky approaches her, he gets her into the apartment. She states how she's uncomfortable being there. She tries to leave. He puts his arms up. And again, the way Avildsen and the way the actors really make it, because
they sell it
because it is particularly Talia Shire, who at that time was probably the actress, the actor with the most cachet coming off of the Godfather movies and such. So yeah. She was recognizable. And she sells it because there's never really a look of fear on her face. Like, oh my God. Like,
what am I getting myself into?
Yeah, it was nervousness. And it wasn't that she didn't like this guy. And it's not... It was never a thing of submission, like where she just submits because she was beat down. It was, you know, it was a consent. Mm-hmm. And she was like, yeah, I want to, you know, and that first kiss and embrace is really tender. It's not, again, this could have gone the way where people are going, oh my God, he's raping her.
No,
right?
No.
But
no.
It, the way that it's filmed and acted, they sell it so that. You know, anybody else, it could have come off very, very creepy.
Yes. And, you know, to that point, I loved how they filmed it because each scene is like very real time. It's not like a lot of fast editing cut back and forth. It's they let it play out for the long 2 minutes that was.
Right.
And it was so real because the way that they shot it, too, is in a corner. You're only in a small space. Right. So you actually feel the intimacy and how close they are.
Right.
And I wish films like still film romantic scenes like this. Mm-hmm. And we don't get that style anymore.
Yeah, it was, you know, and again it also signifies for Rocky in the movie Rocky that above and beyond this being a sports film, this is a love story. Okay.
Yes.
I mean and on the one hand we have a guy who just wants to be able to he wants to take a shot, not embarrass himself, and he wants to go the distance. Yet at the same time, throughout their entire courtship, the words "I love you" are only uttered at the very end of the movie. Not before he goes into the ring, not any time sooner than that. And it really solidifies and brings their courtship full circle, where he did this for himself. He himself is at this point. Adrian is at the point where they are in love. And that love transcends whether he won or lost. He went the distance. And he has Adrian. And it's such a great
shot. She didn't even watch the fight.
Nope.
She just loves him.
Nope.
Which is great. Because
yep.
Also, the ending for the film, because we're talking about that, the ending of the film was actually very different. Because it was originally that they had the clear winner was
right.
Apollo Creed. And then Rocky actually goes back to the dressing room and then he talks to Adrian there and they mm-hmm. walk off into the distance.
Right.
Which is, if you're all watching us, we have the picture of Rocky and right Adrian there. Together holding hands walking away off the screen. And that's the original ending. But
yeah.
Obviously that got changed because they felt that Adrian's character was kind of written off the story. Like, she faded away within all the fighting
right.
that was going on. So they brought her back in the end to change the emotional beat at the end, ending it on a high note
yeah.
and having her actually physically come into the ring. So
yeah.
she's now really a part of Rocky's
right.
life.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I was just, you know, in research, too, the other important thing we just brought up is the go the distance speech, right? And believe it or not, that was almost scrapped. That mm-hmm. speech was almost scrapped amidst the intense shooting schedule of 28 days and a mere, well, right here it says $1 million budget.
$1.1 million.
When Hamilton decided to go ahead and shoot it, Stallone's performance made the crew all misty-eyed and they realized it had to stay. The Academy rewarded him in kind, making Stallone just the third person in history to earn Oscar nominations for both writing and acting in the same film. You know, for me, I can't imagine Rocky without that scene. That scene is the linchpin because it really sets apart that this is a sports movie that's not about winning.
Yeah.
And without having it, it also it brings his heart. Like, I can't imagine that movie without that scene.
I can't imagine it because also the end frame is he's hugging Adrian.
Right. Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's just them two.
Uh-huh.
I love their relationship. I compare a lot of film relationships to them two because
uh-huh.
they're like the epitome of what a good relationship should be. because they complement each other so well. We see even the moments of doubt with Rocky, and he's finally actually opening up to Adrian. Like, she's still there. She's still supportive. She still believes in him.
Right.
Even when Polly was giving him crap, like, nah.
Yeah.
And Mickey telling him to stay down and whatnot. Like,
right. Now I got to finish this.
Adrian always believed in Rocky.
Right.
And that still resonates throughout all the other films that followed.
Yeah, and also too, there's an honorability to Rocky. There's strength in honor, and honor. You know, Rocky Balboa. He's a statue, literally for honor. You know, I mean, yep. He is, and he would never mistreat, you know, Adrian or, you know, any woman. And that's too, that goes
he's
into.
Always loved her.
Always loved her.
Even when he first walks into the pet shop and they introduce the audience to who Adrian is, it establishes the fact that he's been flirting with her and going into that pet store every single day.
Absolutely.
Lord still knows how long. So,
but he took care of people too, like Paulie.
Yeah.
You know, he ended up taking, you know, he takes care of people very well. You know, even in the future movies and such. So, again, that was, as you know, that was one of my little pet peeves about Creed, is that I was having a hard time imagining that Rocky Balboa would have just completely lost contact with Mrs. Creed and the family after Apollo passed away. After giving such a moving eulogy, just, sayonara, see you later. Yeah. I just found that hard to believe with the character that I've come to know and love throughout cinema history, because he is always a man about honor. And that's another thing too, that people had to gravitate to, you know, and it's so important, you know, and Sylvester Stallone nailed it.
Yeah. And the great thing about Rocky, there's so many great individual characters also, like Mickey.
Right.
Mickey being the trainer, mixed gym. I loved Burgess Meredith. He was so good as the hard-nosed, hard, really experienced guy who's been there, done that. But when he cares, and finding out that Rocky now has this fight, he needs a manager who will actually properly train him. Because Rocky, again, unconventional types of fighting and methods that he has, he needs an actual trainer to help motivate him who's had experience.
Sure. And let's, you know, the other great thing about Mickey, too, at least the way that I perceive the character, is Mickey's a character looking for some semblance of a redemption. He doesn't have the best life in the world. You can tell by his face. He's had a hardened life. And, you know, as you know,
you even
he's
got a backstory with him when he's pulling out the clippings, trying to convince Rocky to be his manager.
Why you need a manager. Why you need a manager.
Because he didn't.
Yeah. And it was, for me, again, as a 10-year-old kid, when I see Burgess Meredith up on screen, and it didn't matter whether it was in Rocky or, say, Foul Play or anything, he was the Penguin in Batman. For me, he's the Penguin in Batman. And I was like, oh my God, the Penguin's in this movie. And he looks so different. But he was so great. And in Rocky, Rocky II, Rocky III, you know, that character really had come around full circle. There's a great scene. We talked about this during the watch along. You know, he's Rocky Balboa's on TV. He's got this title fight, and at first Mickey comes over. Hey, you need a manager, kid. And you sort of kind of know that it wasn't necessarily altruistic. You know, it's like he just threw him out of his gym.
Yeah,
like
put
earlier
his
that
gear
day
on Skid Row.
Right. So, but their relationship and how it ends. You know, because Stallone has that amazing monologue that you had brought to our attention, was impromptu.
Oh, it was impromptu. It was during the whole when Mickey walks out and Rocky starts yelling, during his frustrations. That was actually impromptu because they didn't have, again, the production was so tight in schedule. They didn't have a lot of money. And the whole, this place stinks and whatnot, it was actually because the bathroom that he went into, it actually really did smell. And so that was, like, inspiration of, like, what went into that big monologue of his.
Right.
And I thought that was very interesting because it just shows that he really, Sylvester, like, really went into it, into his character. It's like, is that was a very realistic frustration type of yelling.
It's like, the first time we see Rocky Balboa
lose it. More so because he's a composed guy that everyone likes. And I feel like he never really gets to say. He doesn't allow people to see himself if he feels down on his life.
Oh, absolutely.
And so to have a real moment with Rocky to not like vent out his frustrations, I think it was very believable.
Oh, absolutely. And it came at a time too, because, you know, if you're watching the movie, you're the audience, and you see Mickey coming to him after Mickey literally just publicly humiliated him. He humiliated Rocky in front of the entire gym. And now he's coming to him hat in hand to say, hey, you're going to need a trainer. Hey, I can do this for you. Even as an audience member, you sort of kind of like, really?
It's like, first you need the apology.
Yeah.
And then you can ask.
Yeah. Him. And it's like, wow, really? Because you just threw him out? Like, again, it was perfect. It's great screenwriting because you automatically empathize for Rocky Balboa. And when he blows his top, it's so warranted that as an audience, you're like, absolutely, you know. But it could have ended there. He could have gotten another trainer. But no, we have a wonderful shot from outside of the apartment complex where you see the apartment, you see the door,
Rocky
steps going
down,
trains going by. This is in Philadelphia. He catches up with Mickey. No dialogue is heard. You can tell that they're exchanging some words. And it ends in a hug and then a handshake, a noble gesture, which means, okay,
and a term of understanding each other now.
Absolutely.
And then the great thing with Mickey, and we see that for the following movies as well, is that Mickey tells Rocky what he needs to hear. Like, if Rocky's doing something wrong, Mickey will tell him.
Right.
And I feel like a great trainer will let you know all your faults.
Yeah.
Without, you know, judgment. It's just like, this is your fault. Work on it. Improve upon it. And that's what good managers
absolutely
also do.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, we have Pauly.
Yeah, Pauly.
Lovable.
Hateable.
Hateable Pauly.
Yeah.
But in the end, we love him too, because it's great that they establish Adrian, who's such a soft, caregiving person compared to her hard-headed brother.
Yeah, let's just say about Adrian, like, soft, she's introverted. She is under a shell. She has what can
under
be
sweaters,
described
more so.
Under sweaters, these librarian-type glasses. You know, never really, from what we can see, always has a hat on. We don't see her hair come down much. And she's under what can be described as Pauly is like, he's an ogre. He's a Neanderthal. I mean, this guy has his issues too.
He's an alcoholic.
He's an alcoholic, but he also feels like there is a military picture of him. And you sort of kind of get the sense that he feels that he was left behind, that he couldn't make anything of himself. And when he drinks alcohol, it just becomes worse. And perhaps Adrian held him back, and he feels he's the older brother. And he's almost ashamed to admit that it's Adrian taking care of him. So when that explosion happens on Thanksgiving night, not only does Pauly he's an ass. He throws out the turkey.
Right. People spend hours on turkey, and then he throws it out into the yard.
And then later on down the line, just as Adrian's coming out, and this is a great scene too, because it really shows the change in Adrian and Rocky, and they're watching the news. They're watching the footage from the fight announcement, and Rocky meets Apollo, and Pauly comes home just as I think it was Rocky or Adrian saying something to the effect of, what has he done? Or what does he want from me? What does he want? And Burt Young as Pauly comes in, and he just goes nuts. He flips. And
this is the Christmas night,
And he's throwing Rocky out, his only friend
with a bat.
And when the scene ends, you know, you realize that Pauly is a broken man.
Mm-hmm.
He really is. He's a broken man, and Rocky Balboa can't do anything other than sympathize with him.
Yeah, you know? that was great acting on his behalf also, because it shows that you all, at the end of the day, you just feel for him. Because he really doesn't have anything going on for his life, going on, any good things. And then you see, also, you see the broken Polly, but you see the strength, the strong and strength of Adrian. Because, like, she's been with Rocky for a good amount of time now, that he's having influence on her, and she's actually speaking up,
she
sticking
yells,
up for herself. Yeah. She's yelling.
She
like,
pulls
what
him by
you?
The right by his shirt
and
collars.
Like starts hitting him, and I'm like, yes, Adrian, just tell him.
Yeah,
it's like you stick up for yourself because you have been carrying him and watching him this whole time and taking care of him. It's like, yeah, you don't owe him anything, and I'm so glad you got to voice your opinion, especially in a film like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you think it'd be about Rocky and all about Rocky, but like Adrian has her moments to shine as well.
Absolutely. And again, another, you know, that's the greatness of the script. I also, because that is not too far after that scene, Rocky is working out in the gym and he's about to throw in the towel and he's at a punching bag and Paulie comes in. And he's holding it and he goes, hey, I wanna
make
ask
money
you about you. He goes, I wanna make a business proposition. Would you mind if I made some money? And look, at that point, Rocky,
that's
you know,
all he
just,
can do.
Rocky's like, you know what? If you can do it, buddy, if you can do it, Polly, I'll let you do that. I don't want you working for a mafioso. You know, you can't do that. That's not good for you.
Yeah.
If you can make money off my name,
go
sure thing.
It.
And he has him on his side in the ring, too.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
But,
really, one more thing, really quickly, back to the scene where, you know, Adrian and Polly are going at it. Because I've watched this movie so many times. I kid you not. There was one time I was watching it, of course, probably by myself. I was in Illinois with my parents. And my dad walks into the room. Shout out to my dad. And it's this moment when they're yelling at each other. And he just looks like, yep, they're Italian.
Yeah, they're Italian.
I'm like, just, yep. Italians yelling at each other. That's
This movie, you know, you had, again in the 70s, you had two very Italian-American movie characters come out. You had Rocky Balboa, and then you had John Travolta as Tony, I forget, Tony Moreno. I forget what his last name is in Saturday Night Fever. And another very popular movie about, I mean, it's basically the Rocky of disco. Is Saturday Night Fever, because Rocky ended up influencing so many other movies and genres that people needed the underdog kind
story.
Of story. And those two movies, influence on Italian-American of that era, is huge. It's huge. It really is. So you're right. They're Italian.
They're Italian. I'm like, yep. I love it because during our watching, I was like, count how many people yell at each other.
They yell at each other a lot.
It's like they're getting the voices out. I love it. And then, of course, we had Apollo Creed, Carl Weathers.
Another,
just an iconic character. Where
Absolutely.
You take out of Rocky. To have a great fighter, you have to have someone who's equally as great to be his opponent. And I think Carl Weathers, his whole story and how he got involved with Rocky, and I think was fantastic to know. His audition process, because Sylvester wasn't an established actor. No one knew of him. Carl Weathers was like, this would be better if I had an actor with me.
Yep.
And they're like, well, sure enough, you had the writer and the actor right here. And he's like, And then Carl just like took a second. He's like, yeah, maybe he'll do better.
Yeah.
And then Sylvester Stallone actually offered him the job on the spot.
Yeah,
so I think it's great to cast someone who can say their opinions, but also in the end, you know, like get across what they want.
There is something else about Apollo Creed too. You know, he symbolizes in a sense. He symbolizes the Apollo Creed in that movie symbolizes corporate America, which at that time too there was a lot of distrust. Towards that, and Apollo Creed was hyping the American dream.
Patriotism.
He played off that a lot. Of course, too. The other thing, the reason why there's such a patriotic, in a sense, feel. This movie, 1976, was taking place during a very seminal part in this country's history. It was the bicentennial year.
Yeah.
Okay. And this fight was fought around the bicentennial in July, and you know Apollo Creed could have come off as a much seedier, swarmier villain. And I mean, because the whole story is that he had this fight set up with him and his promoter. His opponent ends up in the hospital. They got 5 weeks. 5 weeks to come up with something, or else they're going to have to scrap the entire plan. And it was Apollo Creed who comes up with the idea of, because again, not just a fighter, but he was a businessman.
And
he had a good sense for this thing, and his idea is
what would sell and what would promote.
What's going to sell? I'm going to take a local boy from Philadelphia. What's more American than that? Than giving somebody the shot at the title, and I'm going to make him a star. I'm going to make America a star, and I'm going to make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to look good while I do it.
And there are a lot of behind door meetings, and another great scene which really exemplifies Apollo Creed's business savvy, in a sense, is obviously they were picking what they thought would be a chump, right? And there was the news story of Rocky hitting the meat, punching the meat, that the only person in the office watching that was his trainer, as they were going over figures and advertising hooks and what they can do to promote. The trainer's watching is like, "Hey, Apollo, I think you ought to come over and look at this guy." He goes, "This guy means business." He goes, "Yeah, he'll be down." I mean business too. He was talking a little bit of a different business, mm-hmm. And I did like that at the start of the final fight, the announcers even make it a point to say, "Apollo Creed not looking his best, but he's still, you know, he was pretty bulked up to me, but yeah. He wasn't anybody
I'd want to fight." Better than Rocky, we'll just say that.
It's an important part of the script to say that Apollo Creed wasn't really taking this match all too seriously.
No, he wasn't.
Until he got that first punch. So,
I do enjoy Creed because I said during the watching line, I love how he delivers lines. Mm-hmm. When he wants something, he will say it, and he means it now. Like, he demands it now. And I think he just holds such a presence that's so influential throughout all the films that he's in. Because even if he's not, when we see in, like, 4 and 3 and 4 and stuff, whenever he wants something, people are like, "I'm not so sure, Apollo." He's like, no, he's very adamant what he wants, he wants it. And I think it's just great that Rocky learned so much from Creed, even from the first fight to, like, the more following movies and whatnot. But right. It was such a good pairing of those two.
I agree. And it's the other great thing, too, when you talk about the writing, like, he isn't evil. Like, he isn't a villain. Apollo Creed isn't a villain. He's an adversary. He mm-hmm. becomes the adversary to our Rocky Balboa. But he's not a villain. He's just the hurdle that could potentially keep Rocky from not going the distance. It's like he's the mountain that Rocky has to stand up against. Because as we then know through the future movies, they do this great thing where they take Apollo Creed and they become good friends. Mm-hmm. Rocky Balboa earns the respect of Apollo Creed. And again, at the end, the words exchanged are, you know, "Not going to be no rematch. There's not going to be no rematch."
I don't want one.
Stallone's like, "I don't want one." Like, trust me, like, no way. And it's great because, A, it tells us what a grueling fight it was for the champ.
Yep.
And it tells about our main character. "You know what? I don't want one. You know, I made it with you. I don't have to prove anything to anybody else."
Because I just did.
It's great. Carl Weathers have said of his performance of Apollo Creed, and I had mentioned this during the Creed podcast, that the hardest, most difficult scene that he had to film was the film, and it was the scene in which the end of the 14th round, where he just beats the tar out of Rocky, and Rocky's in his corner and everybody's telling him, "Stay down, stay down." Adrian can't even watch, you know. She turns away, "Stay down," and he fights up, and Creed thinks he's got, like, that's it. He never expected it to go 14 rounds.
Yeah.
And when he sees him get up, it's not like even he's like tells him, "Stay down, like, you've proven stay down." The wind comes out of Creed, like, Creed just goes, Like, and there's this look
defeat
of
defeat already.
Despondency, like, you're just not going to give up. And he's like, oh, my head. Like, and it's just like the look in his the look in his face just says a million words about that fight. And then when they come in for round 15, they're just, they can barely keep their arms. It's again,
hobbling.
Man, the way it's edited, the way that it's shot, the cinematography, what they, the trickery that they had to use. Let's talk about this, because you were talking about this, and you roll with it, because, you know, we're in an arena, and it wasn't quite full.
Yeah, so during production, because they had such a limited budget, you know, they always asked for extras and whatnot, and they never really got as many extras as they always wanted per scene. For the arena area, there was a lot of actual empty seats, because, mm-hmm. like, they had to stage it, like, the whole place was filled, so they actually used other stock footage of big audiences and crowds, and they used that as editing to edit the audience. They're like, oh, the whole place is filled, but really it wasn't.
Yeah, and there's a lot of low lighting.
Yeah.
You know,
there, you can only see the really the ring part.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, let's get into the production aspect, because sure. they had such a limited budget. Originally, they were envisioning $2 million for budget.
Yeah.
And they got it under budget.
Right.
At the end of it, came out to 1.1. But they did a lot of financial cuts here and there. They told sure. the actors, for the most part, definitely Talia Shire, that they bring in their own wardrobe. So, like, a lot of Adrian's clothes were actually Talia Shire's personal wardrobe that she had.
Uh-huh.
So, just to save on...
She has nice hats.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
to save on wardrobe and cut costs there. And also, the most... well, actually, another scene that's I found very interesting were the ice rink first date night scene.
Yes, yes.
They actually did a call for, and they were expecting about 300 extras to fill in the, you know, other skaters in the area. And during production, during the day where, I believe, Sylvester Stallone says, like, we were on a bus and we get there, and much to our dismay, that no one showed up. Like, not one person. I think actually one person showed up. But, like,
it's probably the guy driving the Zamboni.
Yeah, they were expecting like 300 and only one person showed up. So they had to rewrite it again. It goes to the writing. They had to rewrite the scene to make do with what happened during filming.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually better because we didn't need a lot of people, because I liked the fact there was only two of them on the rink getting to know each other and having fun and kind of being themselves.
It was great exposition. Because we learn about Rocky Balboa. We learn the significance of what it is to be a southpaw. Why he can fight and why he does this. And you're right. I think, again, it's another one of those happy accidents in filmmaking. Much, much, you know, very similar to the shark not working in Jaws. Caused them to redo the script in such a manner that they had to think a little bit outside the box. Think of different ways in which to position a camera to get the shark. This is the same thing. It's like, nobody's here. What are we going to do? Well, it's Thanksgiving night. We're alone. I'm going to pay this guy $10, you know, for 10 minutes so that she can skate in the rink and we can walk around. And it was, and again, it adds to the courtship. Because when you think about it, what are they doing? They're in a skating rink. Mm. Which isn't unlike a bot. They're not unlike a ring. They're going around in circles and they're trading conversation, not jabbing one another. Much
it's like
more,
who they are.
Yeah, it's
really.
Who they are, and it adds to the courtship
and like why they are.
Cause
even Adrian mentioned like her mother telling her she wasn't born much with the body, but so developed the brain.
Right,
and then Rocky was the opposite.
Right.
So it's like they're getting real, and even in their past, like
absolutely.
Who they are and how they grew up.
Yeah, and it's a tender moment. It's a sweet moment that you know, again, it's one of those things as part of the Rocky Adrian courtship. It's very sweet.
I love it so much.
Know? Yeah,
I really
nine
do.
Minutes.
9 minutes.
8 minutes.
Yo, time.
Come on, guys. I gotta go home for
it's
my.
It's like that
dinner.
Guy. It's like just let them be.
But
no one's
just,
there. You can walk
it's sort
away.
Of funny,
actually,
you know, it's 5 minutes.
I kind of did like the aspects, like, let's get to know as much about these characters within a 10-minute time span.
And it was done in a way that doesn't feel like you were beat over the head. It didn't feel like exposition, even though we're getting a ton of information.
A lot.
About those. So, you know, I do have to credit too, so please forgive me, but there were actually two editors who were credited, won the Academy Award. The other gentleman was Scott Conrad, who worked in movies such as A Boy and His Dog and Cat's Eye, Up in Smoke. You know, another, and again, to credit these guys for making, you know, an exciting fight movie, bringing you into the ring, making you stand up and cheer. Again,
I cheer every time I watch this.
It's hard not to. It really is hard not to.
You have no heart if you don't.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'll just say that.
Fair enough. Who am I to dispute?
It was Richard Halsey and Scott Conrad for Best Film Editing, which this film also won Academy Award for.
Yep.
A little bit more about the production. They had to do a lot of guerrilla filming, which means they, because, again, such low budget that they had to steal a lot of shots.
Yeah.
Where one in particular was the whole, during the training fight, training scene when Rocky's running and he's near the dock and you see the boat in the background.
Right.
That was actually stolen.
The boat?
The dock? That particular shack. They didn't have any permits for that.
Nice.
And it was mostly during the whole training part because they were in the crew and production crew were in the van. They're like, this is a great place. There's a boat there. Go. Okay. And they had Sylvester get out of the van and literally just run. And they filmed it from the window of the van. running.
That's guerrilla filmmaking. Guerrilla filmmaking.
And another one was during also, like, the shot right before that when he's running through the market. That was stolen as well because all those people, and when you watch that scene, you see all the people in the background actually looking at Rocky's like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
But that was real.
And somebody threw him an orange.
And that was completely
it's like, hey, it's great.
On spot as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and again, the montage scene comes to, you know, the movie is a series of setups to an ending. So the first time that Rocky starts off in his training, he gets up, drinks six raw eggs, he jogs out, huffs and puffs. Going up those stairs is a labor. He doesn't give up. Very important to know. He doesn't give up. But when he gets up there, 72
steps?
He is very winded. Very winded, very sore that day. So when it comes to the montage scene, and again, maybe now is a good time to talk a little bit about music and score. The music, the bed starts off so soft. Like, you know, and along with each cut, and there's not a ton, but with each cut and him and Rocky training and running, because it always came back to him running, the swell comes up so that by the time we're at the foot of those stairs, it comes up to this just like, you feel like you've trained with him.
Yeah,
and you
absolutely
can't help when you get to the top. You're like, he did it. Like, this is amazing.
I feel like Rocky every time I run.
Yeah. It's one of those things in cinema history that you know, all things worked. They really choreographed this thing. And they never abused the audience because everything, Rocky earns everything emotionally from beginning to end, and it earns it, and that's one of the reasons I think it really won the Academy Award.
Yeah. And more about the famous art museum running up the stairs scenes that, you know, just started a phenomenon. That for the production aspect, that was actually one of the first shots that the Steadicam was around,
right?
So which I found fascinating. We had the inventor of the Steadicam, Garrett Brown. He was going around. He invented the Steadicam.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so brand new that he was, like, trying to sell it to production companies and whatnot. And this was, like, a few months before they filmed this, right. he and his girlfriend, Garrett Brown and his girlfriend, actually went up these art museum stairs and filmed. He filmed his girlfriend running up the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And he took that footage and sold it sent it to people. And they're like, yeah, this is awesome. Little did he know that a few months later, he would actually be filming on the same steps
right.
with the Steadicam Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
Which I found fascinating.
And, you know, the interesting thing, too, is when we talk about editing and pacing, you know, it's interesting because, again, this is a movie which allows the characters to breathe. It's not overly cut. It's edited just perfectly. You know, arguably, arguably the strongest shot in the entire training montage is when Avildsen lets his camera roll on a side dolly as Rocky runs by the shipyard. Allowing this to play out in a long tape allows viewers to fully digest the feat of Rocky sprinting the length of a ship that we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Avildsen, again, lets his shot breathe during the scene where Adrian visits Rocky's apartment for the first time. That first kiss captured with a perfect level of intimacy, which we were talking, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Only a few cuts, a slow crackling song. The song, by the way, is the Rocky theme with lyrics put to it.
Gonna fly.
Gonna
fly now.
And again, filmed any differently, filmed from certain angles, that scene could have been creepy and menacing, but it's not.
I did not get that message whatsoever.
Yeah, so it's, you know, the long take, again, Mickey walking up the stairs in his apartment. It's a long take. He's an old man, and he's walking up the mountain. You know, he's coming with hat in hand to ask for a job, more or less.
Yeah.
But it's a great scene with him walking up the stairs. And they let it play out.
Yeah, and that's the great thing that I think I was saying earlier, that, like, each scene is really by real time. You see Rocky walk from, like, the left of the frame to the right, all the way
right.
across the screen, walking down the streets and everywhere. And I think, because it feels so real in time, it feels
right.
so realistic.
Absolutely.
And then one more thing about the running of the stairs as well, that we see Rocky go up those stairs twice in this film. The
mm-hmm.
first time he can't make it
oh,
during
yeah. well,
his earlier training.
Yeah.
But the second time he does, that was actually shot 2 hours apart from each other.
Yeah.
Which I found pretty cool.
Because
they had to. And
low
it was also
movie.
The
yeah,
yeah. a low budget. You have to do the same
yeah.
thing in the same day.
Yeah.
But very cool. But even those two different, they're greatly different.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell something completely different in the story.
Absolutely.
Playing that along.
Absolutely. So I think we should really do, you know, we have to talk a little bit about, we have to talk about the music. We have
music,
to talk about
of course,
the score.
Bill Conti.
Yeah, Bill Conti's score in this movie. Again, if ever music was used
iconic.
As an effect, much like the theme from Jaws, inhibits scares, horror, not knowing what's underneath you in the water. Rocky just says it's pure inspiration. It gets you going. It swells when it needs to, and it mirrors the characters on screen without being bombastic
mm-hmm.
at all. And again, this is a time, too, you have to, you know, the way people obtained their music was literally from the radio. The connection to movie and music, you know, was very, very relevant, and you can see what it did. If a movie had a great soundtrack, that soundtrack sold, and this is, you know, it's so funny that we're coming back to vinyl now, but that's what you were buying the records
back.
From. Saturday Night Fever, as I mentioned earlier, is a true testament to this. The Bee Gees soundtrack was huge, and the movie helped perpetuate its sales, much like the Rocky, perpetuating the sales of the Rocky soundtrack. You listen to the radio, there was no videos at the time, your video was the movie. And you would see the movie, they would play it on the radio, that encouraged the album sales, and it became a number one selling soundtrack album, it became a number one selling song, being requested on the radio, where people would call up, and to this day, even like you yourself have just proven the point, you use it when you run. It's so inspirational.
I do, every single time. guys. I'm not joking. Yeah. I love Rocky. And I love the music. I love the soundtrack. Rocky's so good to listen to for every film.
Right.
Not just this one. Every film. And Bill Conti. And I think the conception of just the theme song of Rocky.
Right.
I liked the process and how it actually came about it. So John Alveson actually wanted a minute and a half snippet of music from Bill. And he's like, okay, yeah, sure. Gave it to him. And during the training montage, when they're like editing that, they're like, we need a little bit more music, something mm-hmm. easy that's upbeat that we can edit the beats to.
Right.
And so Bill Conti went back to the music, added like 30 more seconds. Yeah. And then they're like, okay, when Rocky runs up the steps, let's have something that swells more.
Right.
So Bill Conti added more. It just kept like he kept adding more music to the same theme song.
Right.
And then we finally got a track at the end.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, what's the name of it? And they're like, well, think of it like Rocky's just flying now.
Yeah.
Hence the title, Gonna Fly Now.
Yep. Yeah, it's
I love
awesome.
It.
I mean, there are some great stats on this. So, you know, it unfortunately we lost the Oscar to Barbra Streisand's Evergreen for her remake of A Star Is Born. And Barbra Streisand, that was huge.
Well, at a time, she was unbeatable as well.
Yeah, unbeatable as well. But catch this. Topping the Billboard charts in the first week of July 1977, won 1988 ASCAP Award for the most performed feature film standard and placed number 58 on the AFI's 100 Movie Songs. How many movies do you go today whose song actually tops the charts of what you hear on the radio today? Today, it's really not
Maybe
a lot.
Maybe Pitch Perfect.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, it's not, but a score.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking, like, I remember
Hans Zimmer, John Williams.
Yeah, but Hans Zimmer, I don't hear Hans Zimmer on the radio.
No,
I don't hear
on the radio.
Him on pop stations. You know, John Williams, I mean, when Star Wars came out, Star Wars, the theme to Star Wars is number one on the charts as well.
Yeah.
It's hard
but
for
on the radio.
But on the radio?
No.
I don't hear score on a pop station, you know. So the Street Corner Harmony of Take It Back, sung by Stallone's Brother Frank. So he kept it in the family. So it's just it's great and fascinating about what music can do for a movie, and that's whether think about the Godfather theme.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Think about how iconic
the
these things
shot.
Are. You know, and it's you can't disassociate because it's such an ironclad lock. You can't think of Rocky theme, well, other than, you know, I mean, it just goes with this movie. It's hard to not think of it. Same as to hear Jaws theme, Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, The Godfather, you know, those are just a few. E.T.
Yeah.
Just a few themes that they are just so embedded into our, as a movie fan.
And I think it's great because, like, when I was in high school, our high school band always played Gonna Fly Now.
Right.
At all of our pep rallies. So, like, it's a iconic soundtrack.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's take it a step further. We'll go to Rocky III. Okay.
Yeah.
Another perfect example when you have Eye of the Tiger. You know,
yeah.
Eye of the Tiger.
Survivor.
Survivor. Again, another song, born of movies, played on the radio a ton because the movie made the song, brought the song to greatness, and
mm-hmm.
everybody identifies. That's why when you listen to the Rocky theme, you identify with Rocky. It gets you up and going. You use it to run.
They
use it at high school marching bands.
I listen to Rocky a lot. I watch these movies a lot, you guys. I really do. And even like the fourth movie, the album, I actually
awesome.
Own it on CD. Like, that's, I love Rocky.
Yeah.
I love their music because each movie has its own amazing soundtrack in it.
Right.
Okay. So
I want to talk a little bit too, if we can, because just to give an idea, I always love when we do throwback movies.
So do I.
I always love when we do this, and you know, I love talking numbers and how certain things have influenced things, and I've mentioned it many a time here. You know, the industry changed literally when Jaws came out. It coined the blockbuster, and again, times have changed so much. When you look at a movie like Jaws being able to make $100 million, or even Rocky making over $100 million. It did it through the span of the better part of a year, you know, where today we have Star Wars Force Awakens opening up globally, but opening up on
they
like
made
4,000.
They made
50 million on pre-sales like 2 months before the movie came out. So
I was part of that pre-sale.
It's crazy. Times have changed. But again, audiences weren't fragmented. You had television. You had going to the movies. There wasn't this internet, there wasn't video games yet other than arcades, but even the arcades didn't take away from people going to the movies. So I just want to do a rundown of the top 10 movies of that year.
76? Okay.
1976. Now, it's weird, and I think that I honestly believe that information can be a little bit wonky because I can't even find how many screens Rocky was on.
We're
so
on.
Please, if you find something else that's different, but I'm going to start from number 10. Okay. And this comes from worldwide box office, in millions of US dollars. Number 10 was, it says here, Midway. The Battle of Midway, which is a Universal movie, which introduced us to Sensor Round. Mm-hmm. Then we had The Enforcer, which is number 9. That was a Dirty Harry movie, starring Tyne Daly. Oh, a great comedy, Silver Streak. Well, let me give you some numbers. So The Bad News Bears, according to worldwideboxoffice.com, made $43.2 million. Not too shabby. Not too shabby at all. Number 11, I have to mention number 11 because it was the Bad News Bears, as I mentioned earlier.
Underdog.
Now, this little movie, satire on Little League Baseball, brought in $42 million. Again, I don't have location counts, but back in 76, that's sort of kind of big money.
Not as many theaters.
All right, so then we have this movie, which was the first pairing, Silver Streak. Great comedy, Gene Wilder, Richard Pryor together. Great movie. This comedy went on to make $51 million. Then above that, we had Dino De Laurentiis's remake of King Kong, which introduced Jessica Lange to cinema, and had Jeff Bridges and Charles Grodin. This movie right here, $52.6 million. Then, right up above that, we have, believe it or not, an In Search of movie. And I believe it was narrated by Leonard Nimoy. The Search of Noah's Ark. Okay,
oh,
The Search for Noah's Ark.
Yeah.
This was not a movie that has a plot. This was like a documentary in search of Noah's Ark, okay? That movie made $55.7 million. Above that, a horror movie. Richard Donner's horror movie of The Omen, starring Gregory Peck.
The Omen.
Okay, The Omen. Another iconic score right there. Okay, so that movie did 60.9. Right up above The Omen, one of the Academy Award nominees for that year, All the President's Men. Dustin Hoffman.
Awesome.
Remember,
fast-paced talking movie. Yes.
Yes. When we talked about Spotlight, it's hard to not bring up All the President's Men when you talk the movie Spotlight. Now, that movie made $70 million, okay?
That's still, we could do an anatomy on that one.
Yeah, All the President's Men. It's as topical today because of Spotlight as it was when it was released in 1976. Above that was A Star Is Born, which we just talked about.
Barbara.
Okay. Barbara Streisand, $80 million. Then there was a movie that I'm going to have to look it up. It was called To Fly. Hmm. It's the number 2 movie of 1976. I got to be honest.
But not going to fly now.
It didn't fly. No. I don't know where it flew to. Flew south for the winter. And then that movie did $86.6 million. And then Rocky comes out and domestically, $117 million.
Wow.
And Stallone himself.
For a little underdog.
And that movie itself, again, 117. Stallone gets points on the gross.
Points.
And I'm willing to bet that those people are like going, dude, you're crazy. Yeah. Of course we're going to give you that deal. Oh, okay, we'll make your movie. Go ahead. And you got points in the gross.
And for being a no-name at the time, right. too. Like, they... granted, give it to the production team that, like, they also made a risk mm-hmm. on putting Sylvester in it as well.
Yeah. And I have to say, too, that if we can talk about... Because this is really a throwback Academy Awards, right?
Yes.
Some people say that Rocky... didn't deserve the Academy Award for the year. Now, you had the nominations up. Please help my memory.
For the Best Picture for the that 49th year. Academy Awards for 1977 year was All the President's Men,
right.
Bound for Glory,
right.
Network, Taxi Driver,
right.
and Rocky.
Okay.
Look Rocky won.
Rocky won. Folks, when was the last time you can recall an Academy Award ceremony that had such caliber quality films? And that is why some people think that Rocky was maybe too trivial. I disagree. Mm. Not to take away from any of those other films. Those films, I think, in cinema history are equally as important. Network is as relevant today as it was when it was in 1976. In fact, that movie Nightcrawler, the one with Jake Gyllenhaal, is definitely Gyllenhaal is definitely an indictment against news and media, just as Network was back then. All the President's Men, amazing movie. Taxi Driver, Robert De Niro. You know, again, Martin Scorsese.
He was well established at that time too.
Yeah, and going up against that, Bound for Glory. This is not again a very happy type of go-lucky movie thematically. Rocky, again, I say, was released at the right time. The country was trying to shift focus. We had a lot of bad things going on, hence All the President's Men. You know, there was deception in the White House. There was the Vietnam War coming out of the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a whole lot to be happy about. In fact, I can only recall one type of commercial movie winning the Oscar prior to Rocky, and that was The Sting, starring Paul Newman and Robert Redford. A very entertaining, great con movie, but not necessarily your feel-good movie, but it's a good, solid commercial movie. But then other movies out of that time, that you know, you had movies like The Godfather. Again, a fantastic movie, but it's not a knee slapper. It doesn't make you feel good about yourself. Coming Home later on. You had a lot of heavy movies. Even horror movies of the time were brutal. And that was in part just because of the social consciousness of coming out of Vietnam and not feeling good about oneself. Jaws sort of kind of, it changed that. People went to Jaws to be entertained and more comedies are starting to be made. And then, of course, Rocky comes along. And Rocky, I feel, deserves the Academy Award for that time because really, it's something that everybody gravitated to, and it changed. It inspired people. And I think for that alone, it deserves credit because everybody went to the movies to start to feel good about themselves. And Rocky gave it to a nation. And that, to me, is very important. And I don't mean to take away from those other movies because they're great movies.
No, they're all great.
Right? Fantastic movies. But Rocky came out at a time where the country really needed it needed its underdog hero to prevail. And then, of course, we get Star Wars. We get Raiders of the Lost Ark. Our movie going was changing. What people wanted to see was changing. And then we went to the 80s.
See, and also you bring those up. And I think the great thing about Rocky is that this is, if you look at it at face value, it is a simple movie. Like,
very simple.
Simple storytelling, simple characters, simple just plot devices that they use throughout. And I think what was great and what resonates for everybody is, like, it's a sentimental movie.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a sentimental, easy movie that everyone loved at the end of it. You're left with a good, positive feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, another good movie that was like that was, like, other award-winning movies that won Best Pictures, like Shakespeare in Love.
Sure.
Ended on a great, positive... Well, I mean... She left him in the end. But that was a, in fairness, that was like a fairly happy movie. And
right.
Another one that I thought that won, but a lot of people, if you think about it, compared to the lineup, it was up against The Artist.
Right.
That was a simple black and white movie with right. no sound.
Right.
Like, they purposely didn't have dialogue in it until like the last line.
Right.
But that was up against like big name contending movies. and that one, and that was by far the most simplest film out of all the ones of the
lineup. Yeah, absolutely.
That was up against like The Descendants, Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close, The Help, Hugo, Moneyball, Midnight in Paris, Tree of Life, and Warhorse. Like,
yeah, but I would argue that movies. The artist will not. I will argue that The Artist does not have the impact of the staying power Rocky did.
Absolutely. You know, I'm just saying, like,
but I understand what
other
you're
simple
absolutely.
Movies.
Sure.
That won Best Picture mm-hmm. over other bigger,
sure,
bigger production, more higher quality movies.
Absolutely. So we can look at a little bit of grosses for the Rocky, let's say, franchise. And, you know, you're looking at $674,965,956. That's a lot of, and that's just domestic.
Yeah,
okay.
That is.
So, you know, you're looking at, you know, the Rocky as a franchise, between Rocky up until Creed. And again, folks, for those who like really slam me for Creed, Creed is part of a franchise. Okay.
It is
part of the Rocky franchise.
It's Rocky 7.
It's beat for beat a Rocky. No, I'll call it Creed, but it's beat for beat a Rocky movie. And hey, Rocky Balboa happens to be in the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he continues on. In this again, too, I think for Sylvester Stallone, it's sort of kind of, it is his turnaround period because he actually let his character into somebody else's hand. You know what I'm saying? That's a big evolution for him.
Pass the baton to someone else.
And he allowed somebody else to take the character. I'm sure he had his say many a time, which is fine. But, you know, what Rocky has meant to box office, what Rocky has meant throughout the entire franchise, whether it be Rocky 2, 3, 4, 5, Creed. I mean, today, Creed, what it means to a younger movie-going audience or an older movie-going audience, it just says that the staying power of a good true story really prevails. I will always believe in Rocky as being my favorite movie because that is the one that really, as a 10-year-old, got me fired up to go to school, fired up to drink raw eggs, you know, and win in baseball or at least go down swinging the bat. You know, Rocky 3 is great. You know, can't argue that. So, but Rocky always near and dear to the heart because that, the you know, movie affected me in quite a different way than Jaws did.
I love Rocky. I watch it literally a million times. I cannot tell you how many times I've watched this. And I've watched it twice within the last 24 hours. So that just shows you how much I love this. I enjoy Rocky because it's so sentimental. Everyone loves it. It's great any time of the year when you watch it.
Yeah.
And you're always left with a positive feeling. And I love films that leave you on a positive note.
Right.
Especially
absolutely.
This one.
It makes you feel good.
Yeah.
And it doesn't do it by punching you in the head 100 times. It earns every single, you know, emotion.
Yeah.
You know.
Anger, fear, happiness,
yep,
joy, all of it as well. And congrats to Sylvester Stallone for creating such an amazing, iconic character and storyline.
Right.
This generated so many movies from it, so many fans. Yes, Italian Stallion, if you're not watching, I'm wearing my Italian Stallion shirt. I had to point that out because it's still amazing. And then, you know, even Sylvester Stallone now getting, he just won Best Supporting Actor for Golden Globes for Creed,
right,
playing Rocky Balboa, and he's now nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Academy Award.
Yeah.
And it would be great if Sylvester Stallone won, and that would like really just cap off and put like the icing on the cake,
right,
for this character and how many years and how passionate he was to this character.
Yeah, I agree.
Just cap it off.
I want to read from Roger Ebert's review of Rocky.
Oh, I read it too.
Yeah, and you know, because it really sums a lot up. Because you know, he ends the review. There's the fight that ends the film. By now, everyone knows who wins, but the scenes before the fight set us up for it so completely, so emotionally that when it's over, we've had it. We're drained, and we are. But we're emotionally drained in the best sense possible. And again, I have to say, it is literally, folks, the power of movies. This is what movies can do. Movies can change the attitude of a society. The cinema has that power to do it. You don't believe me? Look at what Star Wars did this past year. Star Wars brought together a planet, literally a planet of people, where people forgot. And I can compare it to Rocky, because people forgot about Vietnam. People were forgetting about what was going on at the White House, in politics, in dirty politics, and lying cheaters. They were forgetting about this, and they left the theater feeling good about themselves, and they all did it and had something to talk about within that time frame. Not unlike what Star Wars was able to do this year, in which people went to the movies, and for 2 hours and a little bit after, where they talked about it, they forgot about terrorism, they forgot about economy, they forgot about dirty politics. They were talking about a movie. That, ladies and gentlemen, in my opinion, is the great power of cinema that still exists today. It existed in 1976. And it'll continue so long as you keep on going to the movies. You got to keep going to the movies, folks, because it can change somebody's opinion and it can change your attitude and feeling. But just, 35 frames a minute?
Yep.
So there you go.
You got to keep watching this movie.
Got to keep going to the movies.
Because I certainly will be
absolutely
still watching this movie and all of them over and over and over again.
Yep.
These will never, ever get old.
At 35 frames per second.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Seriously, Rocky is a big part of my life and how I treat things and go into ways and try to be inspirational. And if I'm feeling down in my luck, I think, what would Rocky do during this? If I'm training, I was like, oh, one more mile, Rocky did it. Mm-hmm. So can I.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So big kudos to Sylvester Stallone. You have actually proven that your staying power in this business, which can take a really bad turn on you. But you prevailed, much like your character of Rocky Balboa, and you continue to be in movies. Keep doing what you're doing, sir, and we'll keep watching.
Yep, and we'll keep talking about these movies.
Absolutely.
All right, great dissection. I really enjoyed this film. I can't say it enough. Honestly, I can't. Dimitri, where can everyone keep following you?
Well, please support me on @dmovies1701.
Great.
You can tweet me, and usually anybody who follows me, I just follow them back. I just say, hey, if you're kind enough to support me, I'll support you too. And I'll read the stuff. So that's where you can find me. And here at Anatomy of Movie, usually next to you.
Yep.
We do
a lot of movies together.
Absolutely. Love it.
Yeah. And you can follow me on Twitter @SerafiniTV. He's probably still watching Rocky again. So thank you, everyone, for listening. You can follow Popcorn Talk @ThePopcornTalk. Follow all of our other fun movie film shows that we have here. And follow Anatomy of a Movie @MovieAnatomy on Twitter. Thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. Yo, Adrian.
We did it.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.